So we are here for the second day of study of Keno Upanishad. So Upanishadic study is considered to be the highest because, as the name suggests, Upa means that which is close to us, that which is closest to my real identity. So in a relative sense, we can say that you are all closer to me than the rest of the city of Bakersfield. Then this microphone is close to me and my clothes are close to me. My body is close to me, but closer than the body is the mind. Closer than the mind is the intellect. And closer than the intellect is that which is empowering the intellect, the mind, the body and everything else. So the closest is that pure consciousness is the closest. Therefore, this knowledge is about that which is pure consciousness, meaning Brahman or Ishvara or Chaitanya, Swarupam, whatever you want to call it. So therefore, it is the highest knowledge because it gives the indication of that which is my real personality, indication of that which is the source of my real existence. Then ni means that it is a knowledge that is doubtless, nisankoch. There is no ifs and buts about it. It's a direct knowledge which is without any doubt. And shad means many things, but it means also that it gives me speed. It gives me gati. It gives me movement. So movement from what? Movement from this moment that I am unknown about my own real nature. It takes me to that which will eventually let me know who I am. So this is the higher meaning of Upanishad also, that you can say that Upa means close, ni means niche, means you are sitting down, and sad means sit. So this is obviously the kind of knowledge where you go close to a guru, sit close to him, sit down below where the guru is sitting, and you acquire the knowledge. That is also another meaning. So such an Upanishad called the Keno Upanishad, which is one of the major Upanishads, is what we are studying. Now, as I already said yesterday, Kena Upanishad simply derives its name from the first word of the Upanishad, which is Kena Ishitam Patitam. That is how the Upanishad starts. Presitam Manaha. So therefore, Kena comes from there. Now, any Upanishad or Vedanta in general is trying to indicate that all our understanding of who I am has been wrong. All my life I had lived with a wrong understanding of who I am. Therefore, the attempt on the part of Vedanta is to disown the I that I have owned and to indicate that in order to make that happen, you do not have to go anywhere. So therefore, in that sense, I am not a seeker. I just have to unown what I have owned so far. So this owning is not about owning of the car or the house or the property or bank balance. What I have owned is this entity called this body, mind, intellect, who I think is me. And therefore I have limited, so therefore we say that Brahman or pure consciousness contained within this BMI equipment is Jiva. This is individuality. The pure consciousness not contained by the BMI equipment is Paramatma. Is the Brahman. Right. So, What is it that keeps us away from my knowing my true identity? So Vedanta has the answer, and it says it's because of you are full of desires. So therefore desires have to be purged. They have to be given up. They have to be modified first. And so several methods are given. So we say that the first thing we must do is we must be whipped into action. In other words, if our nature is tamasic, our nature is of laziness, dullness, then we must be whipped into action. So the very first thing that we must do is we must become all karma yogi. Now, karma yoga and all that I have talked before, and I'm sure many other teachers may have talked to you, so I don't want to go into that. But perhaps, maybe I should. So what is karma yoga? There are five principles of karma yoga that we must remember. Number one, we must make the supreme goal. We must make the supreme goal of my life to be attain freedom or come to know who I am, which is synonymous. When I know who I am free. Second is I must select and careful in my selection of what activities I perform. So selfish activity I will give up, selfless activity I will embrace. Third is, regardless of what circumstances come in front of me, I will do my best to contribute to resolving of that circumstance. So yoga karmasu kausalam, I will put forth my best energy. I will not question why I am put in these circumstances. But to the best of my ability, what I can do, I'll do. Fourth is, whether I am successful or not successful, I should be content and happy that I did my best and leave the rest, which means that whatever is the result of my activity, I will accept that result as nothing but prasad from my Lord. So I will not question it. I work harder than my neighbor, why do I not get promoted and why he always gets promotion? I will do my best and leave the rest. Whatever has come to me as his prasad only. And the fifth and the highest is, by performing these four steps properly, I will come to the conclusion. And I will always live in that conclusion, and that is that I am not the doer. So the highest attainment of a karma yogi is that he comes to understand, he comes to feel that he is not the doer. I am only a mere instrument in the hands of the Lord. Through me the activity is happening, but I am not the doer. Right? So I wasn't going to tell you, but I told you again. Please remember, this karma yoga is where everybody's sadhana starts with karma yoga. Therefore, it is important. So what happens when we do karma yoga properly? When we do the karma yoga properly, the vasana kshaya happens. Kshaya means the pressure of the vasana gets reduced. Then as we surrender to the Lord, as we develop devotion, so in karma yoga the thing is dependent on me. See, this is very important. In Bhagavad Gita also, if you divide the Bhagavad Gita, it is like this. The first three chapters, the emphasis on you, me. Karma yoga is emphasized in chapters 3, 4 and 5. So there the self-effort is very important. You yourself can lift yourself like that, it is said in 6th chapter also. So therefore the self-effort is very important. From the 7th chapter in Bhagavad Gita, the emphasis changes. Now the Ishwar Krupa, Ishwar Anugraha is important. You can see the shift in the very few stanzas of the initial stanza of the 7th chapter. Because, as they say, the next 6 chapters, the emphasis is on Tat, that entity. Not Tvam, not the you. And finally, of course, the last 6 chapters are full of Jnana, so it is Asi, you can say. Anyway, so, once we are performing the Karma Yoga properly, then the next one is devotion. We are now very much aware that Ishwar Anugraha, Ishwar Krupa is important in my spiritual progress. So what happens when I do devotion, when I do Karma Yoga, Vasna Kshaya happens. When I do devotion, Vasna Surrender happens. But still some Vasna, some desires, some inherent tendencies that I am not even aware of, are still lying in my subconscious. So they say that when the Jnana happens, when I come to know who I am, all these desires are burnt up. So me without Vasana, I without desires, is the me without ego. Therefore the me without ego is the one without any limitation of body, mind, intellect. And therefore one without ego and the limitation of body, mind, intellect is sarvavyapi. It is not only restricted to this entity, this jiva. He has merged with the totality. So the emphasis of Upanishad is on Jnana, the last part. That means it is understood that when we are opening the Upanishad, we have already performed Karma Yoga to the best. We are already devotee and we have surrendered our ego at the altar. And now we have come to the Jnana path. I am not saying it is necessarily sequential. You can also do parallel. But the idea is that I am well versed. I am way advanced in my own spiritual progress. So therefore Upanishads don't talk about Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga and devotion and all that. They directly talk about that highest knowledge, which as we will see, the teacher will say, cannot be communicated. So when this Jnana happens, then all these desires burn up. That means no activities are now necessary. So no desire-prompted activities will happen. That is why Krishna had said that sarva karma akhilam partha jnane pari samapyate. Sarva karma akhilam, all these activities, hey partha, will go away once you have attained the knowledge as to who you are. So in this sadhana also we can say, in this progress of spirituality, we can say there are stages. We can divide it into four stages. What is it? The first stage is that is here. That means I don't have to travel anywhere in space. I don't have to go to Himalayas, or I don't have to go to the Kailas, or I don't have to go to Char Dham Yatra. Doesn't mean we don't do it. That simply means that I am not going to find him in some specific location. He is here. That is here. Second stage is that is now. They say that the biggest obstacle of spiritual realization is that I am always waiting for tomorrow. It will happen tomorrow. Once I finish the studies, then it will happen. And that is the biggest obstacle. So therefore, that is now. He is here and he is now. So we don't have to travel in space, nor do we have to travel in time. In fact, we have to transcend the time and space. So then the third stage is, that is in me, he is in me. And really me only lives in the present, right? We cannot live on. The mind may actually go in the past and mind may worry about the future, but my existence is only in the present. Nor can I change the past, nor I have any control over the future. So he is in me, that is in me. And the final stage is, that is me. Not that is in me, but that is me. Na bahispragna, na antapragna. Mundaka, Mandukya Upanishad, you must remember, those who have studied. Na prajnanaganam. You cannot define that consciousness because it is neither outside nor inside. It is nothing but that consciousness alone exists. Therefore, he is me. Therefore, this is also nothing but him alone. So that is when we say that, we have actually merged with the... We have identified with the pure consciousness. I am no longer identifying with body, mind, intellect. So a Mahatma, when he says I, he is not saying it's I as this body, mind, intellect. He is saying it's the supreme consciousness, I. Then in order to distinguish that, sometimes they also speak that way. They say the body is hungry. Body needs food. You know, he doesn't say I am hungry. Etc. etc. So this is the sequence that we all have to travel. And so let us start with the Shanti part of this Upanishad, which we have seen yesterday also, but let us make sure we understood what was meant. So I will chant and you repeat after me. Om Apyayantu Mamangani. Vak Prana Chakshuhu Srotram. Atho Balamindriyani Cha Sarvani. Sarvam Brahmopanishadam. Maham Brahma Nirakuryam. Mama Brahma Nirakarot. Anirakaranamastu. Anirakaranam me astu. Tadatmani nirateya. Upanishatsu dharmaha. Te mai santu, te mai santu. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So first, the teacher and the student are asking for health. So the health they are asking for is not just physical health, but also mental health. So physical and mental, both health are asked for. The teacher and the student, Apyayantu, may they grow strong. Mamangani, all my organs such as speech, prana, the vital air, the eyes, the ears. In fact, Indriyani cha sarvani balam, he says, may all my organs become strong. So physical health and mental strength is an important requirement for spiritual progress. And then the second important requirement is, may I have the faith. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Krishna has said in Bhagavad Gita. So without Shraddha, without faith, we cannot obtain the knowledge. It's more important. We will see why. So the prayer says, Sarvam Brahmo Upanishadam. The Upanishads have said that Brahman is everywhere. Brahman is everything. Brahman alone exists. And that Om Upanishadam means that Brahman can only be known through Upanishad. Sarvam Brahma Om Upanishad. So that Brahman can only be known through Upanishads. Because it is not going to be come under anybody's perception. So therefore we have to take the Upanishads Sabda Pramana as the highest Pramana and accept it. Shankaracharya says that the Shraddha is that you accept first and you put it in practice and you come to realize that what I have accepted is the truth. Then it is called Shraddha. So it is not blind faith. It is acceptance of the fact that this knowledge has come from paramparagat knowledge. It has come from teacher to the student. And so it is a direct knowledge which is conveyed through generations. And I have seen it in my guru, therefore I can also achieve that. Like that. So therefore, sarvam brahma upanishadam, ma aham brahma nirakuryam. May I not reject that Brahman. May I not question the existence of the God. There are a number of people actually. In fact, I have a very good friend. He knows what I am doing. A very good person, very compassionate, very helpful. A person, it is difficult to come across a better person. But he has come to this conclusion that Lord doesn't exist. So whenever I meet him in some tender moment, he looks at me compassionately as to why I am waylaid into this. Well, Lord doesn't, there is no Ishvara. And it is not to be ridiculed or laughed at because it is easy to come to that conclusion. First of all, if somebody says, have you seen Ishvara? Then you have to say no. It was only Ramakrishna who told Vivekananda that yes, I talk to him as I talk to you. That is an exception. Otherwise, Ishvara, difficult anybody will say Ishvara. Yes, I have seen. Because it is not an entity, an objectifiable entity that can be seen. So the question itself is really not a very good question. So then we say, okay, Ishvara, you say, is omnipotent and omniscient and all that. Then why has he created this evil in the world? If he is that powerful, why does he tolerate evil? Why do good people always seem to lose? Why cannot he correct the problem? Then you have no argument if somebody says that. Omnipotent means he should be able to. Omniscient, he knows everything also. Then he knew this was going to happen to me. I am his ardent devotee. Then why did he let that happen to me? So you don't have much argument. You say, yeah, that is also true.
So now you start losing your own faith in this one. And then they may say, why, if the final goal is to meet him only, why did he separate? If all his life he was to struggle only for what? To meet him. Then why did he separate to begin with? No, but then I fell under this delusion. So then why did he create this world? So all those arguments. So then if we don't have faith, we will ourselves, we will start losing the faith. Maybe that man is making more sense. I'm only wasting my time. So therefore, maham brahma nirakuryam. Let me not spurn Brahman. Let me not reject Brahman. Let me build up this faith. Until I have put forth the steps towards spirituality so that I come to understand that these questions are useless. Because right now those questions seem very real to me. Then you try to answer and say, no. You see, Ishwar is only a creation. He's the creator. And if you think that his creation has taken place, then only Ishwar comes into picture. Actually, Brahman, you cannot blame Brahman, you see, because Brahman never created anything. He is an impeccable pure entity that cannot be divided. He is not doing anything either. So then your friend becomes more quizzical. So what are you talking about? And then you go on saying, no, but that Brahman, you know, I cannot describe it. Nobody can describe it. It is not a subject of Indriyas. You cannot reach it no matter what you do. And even when you go there in this Upanishad ritual, it will say, you cannot say, I know it. Because to say that you know it means you don't know it. So then you say, okay, this is your typical typical catch-22 of Vedanta, because you cannot answer, so this is escapism. Then you don't have enough faith, you will also start feeling, yes, maybe it is escapism. Maybe it is self-hypnosis. Some people say, are you sure this is not self-hypnosis? No, I am telling you this because either you have thought about it or not, you may think about it tomorrow. So it is important. Therefore, faith is important. Because if we lose faith, we cannot go even one step in spirituality. And how can you have faith? Either you have to have faith in the Shastra, in the scriptures, or you have to have faith in the Guru. Because a Guru is nothing but an embodiment of that highest truth which is explained here. So if you meet a Guru, then the faith will increase. You don't have Guru in your life, and unluckily if you get a Guru who is a fake, then tremendous problem can happen. Isn't it? So therefore we are lucky that we are sitting under this Chinmaya Mission banner. The Srotriya Brahman is the Guru who made a difference in our life. Such an occasion or such a thing is a rarity in life, life after life after life. So if we don't take advantage of it, it is a tremendous tragedy. So, Mama Brahma Nirakaro. Then he says, let the Brahman not spurn me. Supposing I have faith in the Brahman, but what if Lord's grace is not coming? Now, this has to be understood a little bit, because it is not that the Lord is actually turning on and off the grace, you know. His Lord's grace is always flowing. But it is a figuratively saying, then may I catch His grace. It is up to me to catch the grace. The grace is always flowing, but I should be open to catch the grace. So therefore, may I not turn away from Brahman. Nirakaro, nirakaranam astu nirakaranam me astu. He repeats it. May I not reject the Brahman? May the Lord may not. May I not reject the Lord? May the Lord not reject me, please. So that is the faith part. Then in the last sentence of this Santi part, student is asking for all the qualifications that he or she has studied in the Upanishads. These are called dharmaha. Let me have all the dharmas. Upanishatsu dharmaste mai santu te mai santu. All the dharmas, all the qualifications that are described in the Upanishad that are required for a good seeker, for a good devotee, for a good spiritual aspirant. Let me have them. Why? Tadatmani nirateya. Nirateya means I am convinced and I am firm that I want to put forth the effort to obtain what? Tadatmani. Tat Atma Tattva, that which is called as Atma Tattva. I'm interested in attaining and knowing what it is, and therefore, O Lord, please you grace me with all the qualifications that I require. So that we saw as 4 D's yesterday, if you remember. The first one is Viveka, which is discrimination. So at every step in my life, there will be a path of Shreyas and a path of Prayas. Path that is easy to follow and give me immediate fruit of happiness. Path that will be difficult to follow may not give me fruit of happiness immediately, but eventually will give me the biggest fruit ever. Shreyas and prayers, therefore I will be making the right choice at all times. That discriminative capacity between what is permanent, what is impermanent, I will be making it every time. Therefore, O Lord, please give me that discriminative capacity. Then the second D is for dispassion. So may I not get attached to these worldly things and beings, which will take a lot of my time away from my own spiritual progress. Rather, let me have the dispassion that I can go through this whole world serving the society, serving my family members and everybody around me, and yet I am not attached to any of it. It is dispassion. So I think we have seen previously that all Gurudev used to say, build relationless relationship. So in our misunderstanding, we say, how can we have a relation which is relationless? You can. Relationless relationship means it is a relationship that is not binding one to a person or a thing. It is a relationship that actually liberates a person. So it's a relationship built with intelligence. It is a relationship that is built with understanding. It is a relationship that is built not to gain momentous happiness, but permanent satisfaction. So dispassion. Then the third D is for discipline. So in the spiritual path, I will require discipline. So what is that discipline? I should have the discipline of senses. Sense organs don't really travel after ephemeral things, objects and beings of this world. I have the mental capacity to control them. I have the intellectual wisdom to control the mind. So everything is disciplined. I don't get too happy, nor get I do get too dejected. I don't lose heart, nor I feel that my ego is getting any bigger. So samatvam, mental equipoise. So those qualifications. Okay. And then the final D is desire. What is that? My overpowering desire, which is also the goal of the Karma Yoga, the first one, is that I am going to achieve that which I have been deprived of, which is mine, but I don't know yet. Like Lokmanya Tilak said, I think, Swarajya is my birthright, isn't it? So this knowing who I am is my birthright. In fact, nobody can deprive me of that. That is the highest freedom. A democracy is also a freedom, but that is a political freedom. This is the highest freedom. Once I know who I am free like anything. I am not freedom from what? Freedom from my own mind. So I am the master of my own mind. That freedom is what we are seeking. Therefore, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So three times it is repeated because may there be no disturbance from the phenomenal forces, Adidaivik forces. May there be no disturbance from the surrounding forces, Adibhautik. And may there be no disturbance from my own mind, so Adhyatmik. So may there be peace from Adidaivik, Adibhautik and Adhyatmik. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Okay. So then we come to the first mantra of Kena Upanishad. Now seemingly this mantra seems very simple. But this Upanishad starts with a question. Most Upanishads are actually a dialogue between the student and the teacher. Not all Upanishads. There is a dialogue between student and the teacher. And in some Upanishads that the teacher's name and the student's name is revealed. Like in Mundaka Upanishad, I think the Saunak and Angiras. Angiras is the teacher. Saunak is the student. Mundaka, right? Here the teacher's name and the student name is not. In fact, it doesn't say student uvacha. It's also not there. So you have to assume that the student is asking the question. So the very first mantra is student. And the whole rest of the Upanishad is the answer to the question. So that must be such a profound question. And the whole Upanishad is just spent in answering that question alone. So we have to understand the question. And in order to understand the question, we have to come to the same point to which the student had elevated himself. Otherwise, it doesn't become our question because we never had this question. All of a sudden, the student is asking the question, then you say, that's a good question. But we never had the question. So we have to elevate ourselves to the point where the student is so that this becomes my question. Otherwise, the answer has no meaning for me. Right? So therefore, what is the question? Kene sitam patati presitam manaha. Kena pranaha prathamaha preti yuktaha. Kene sitam vacham imam vadanti chaksuhu srotram kau devo yunakti. Same question he has asked in several ways. He starts with an inquiry of mind first. Then he goes to prana, then he comes to karmendriya, then he goes to jnanendriya. His question is becoming deeper and deeper. Why? Because he is not satisfied with all the answers that he has heard first. So, you can imagine a scene where a teacher is sitting in an open space under a tree and the student is there early morning. And with folded hand, he is asking the teacher for an answer. And the guru is about to give the answer. Now, when the guru is giving the answer, He is not going to say it is my answer. We'll see before the class today ends. He's going to say, this is the answer that my guru gave me. If you want to take it, take it. You know, because they don't have this egocentric idea that, yes, yes, I know the answer. Sit down, I'll tell you. Not like that. This is the answer that my guru has given me, which I am giving you. And if this answer makes any difference and you also come to the same height, then you can pass on this answer to your own sishya. This is the idea. So guru is very important because it is the medium through which that answer that cannot be conveyed in words is being conveyed. In fact, in the second or third mantra, the teacher will say, I don't know. And even if I knew, I cannot convey it to you. Then why am I here? Why am I wasting my time? But he said, no, but in the paramparagat, this is what my teacher told me. And so, here. You see? So, the guru-sishya parampara is an important medium through which that knowledge is, unadulterated knowledge has come up to us. These mantras in Upanishads are exactly the way they were at that time. And that has come here because the chanting is so important. So therefore in our Chinmaya mission, this chanting is emphasized. And then many people say, why we are chanting? Our students, our kids don't want to chant. What importance it has? We have to continue this parampara, otherwise the next generation and next to next generation, the next generation, they will get adulterated mantras. In fact, already some Upanishad, there are two type of versions are there. Not everything, but in here and there you see some difference. In Vivek Chudam, you see that quite a bit actually. Not quite a bit, but here and there you see. Now, luckily both words mean the same thing, so that is great. Because this is Shruti, so by hearing, then you can say, no, but you can print it. You can print it, but supposing you print it, a lot of things can happen. The printer can make a mistake, as it often does. Anyway, I don't want to go into that. You understand what I'm saying. So therefore, this paramparagat knowledge has come by hearing from the guru to the sishya, guru to the sishya. And the beauty is that if you read our Ramayana and Bhagavad and all that, the people that we call avatar, like Rama and Krishna, they have gone to the guru. Guru graha patan gaye raghurai, alpakal vidya sadvai. Guru graha patan gaye raghurai. Raghurai Ramachandra ji went to guru's place in order to learn the language, learn the knowledge. And alpakal, in a very short time, vidya sadvai, he understood and became, of course, he is an avatar. Jinke saas sruti, something like that. Jinke saas, sruti sahuchari, wo hari pade, vah kautuk bhari. Jinke saas sahaj sruti chari. This whole Shruti, this whole Vedas is nothing but his breathing. His prana itself is nothing but proclaiming the Vedas. That Ramachandra ji, wo hari pade, that Ramachandra ji is learning in front of the Guru. Vah kautuka bhari, that is such a wonderful thing. And our Krishna also, he went to Sandipani. That is why our ashram's name in Vedanta course is called Sandipani. So Guru is important. Because they have the knowledge of both sides. They have this knowledge of that which they have experienced. And they also have this worldly knowledge. Therefore, they can transmit that knowledge in such a way that we can get some glimpse of what it is. Okay. So, let us analyze the question. Keneshitam patati pesitam manah. Now, kena ishitam, directed by which the mind falls, patati. So, what is the meaning here? When the student is asking this question, we have to understand that the student has definitely able to discriminate between the matter, which is the physical body, and that which is enlivening the matter. See, he would not ask this question if he did not distinguish. So therefore, physical body is made up of Pancha Mahabhut. It's made up of space, air, fire, water and earth. I hope you have all studied Tattva Bodha, so it is very clear. So he knows that this matter does not have life. And yet they seem to function. How? What is it in this matter that makes it work? That is the question. And he brings the mind also into it, which is that subtle body also, and therefore he knows that subtle body also is matter. Not only the gross body is a matter, but the subtle body also is matter. Only thing is, it is subtle matter. So mind and intellect is also nothing but matter only. Because a dead Einstein, as Gurudev used to say, cannot do 2 plus 2 equal to 4. You know, he might be a genius, but once pran chala gaya, so he says, what is it because of whom this mind falls? Now, this is also an important. Why does he use the word patati? Because in our shastra, it is explained that if I see you, that the beam of consciousness, if I am seeing, so the action is seeing, not hearing, then the beam of consciousness shoots through my eyes, envelops your shape, and comes back that information. So the emphasis is not on physical, okay, light rays went and then there is a retina and then the inverted, you know, that is different. Don't say, no, they got it wrong. This is a philosophical text. So it is the consciousness. Understand, without consciousness, retina, no retina, I will have no image creation, isn't it? So therefore, when we say that consciousness goes and falls, that is why this patati word is used. The consciousness falls, envelops the object of my cognition and brings that information back to me. Directed by what? Propelled by what? It happens. What is that force? What is that power that allows me to do that? Then he says, kena prana prathama preti yukta. This prana is called pratham. See, this prana is a very important entity. Actually, if you say prana, now you have seen pancha kosha, isn't it? Would you put prana in, it is in between annamaya kosha and manomaya kosha. So would you put prana in sukshma sarira or sthula sarira? Where would you put it? Sukshma sarira. Actually, it is a joining force between sukshma sarira and sthula sarira. And it is said that these 7 chakras are the chakras where that contact happens. These are the headquarters. Prana, where the sukshma and sthula sarira actually connects. So this prana You know, we know there is Pana, Apana, Vyana, Samana and Udana, right? Pancha Prana is there. So what is this Pana, Apana? Pana is respiratory. Now we also say that when you exhale it is Apana, that is okay. But Prana means it is respiratory system. Apana is excretory system, not necessarily just air but everything else. Vyana is circulatory system. Samana is the digestive system. And Udana is the system that reverses everything. Now all these systems are working not only when I am in the waking state, not only when I am in the dream state, but also when I am in the deep sleep state. Think, am I breathing? Yes. Is circulation blood? Yes, blood is circulating. Yes. Is my digestion continuing? Yes, otherwise next day I'll have problem. All the systems are working. These are all because of prana. And in the dead man, none of this system works. Therefore we say prana chala gaya. When I used to watch movies, you know, there was this character prana. Nowadays, young generation may not know much about prana. But he was such a powerful villain that if prana is not on the screen, so it was like prana chala gaya, you know, that movie, movie was worthless. Okay, so kena prana prathama preti yukta, propelled by whom this prana functions. Okay. Now, let us understand this a little better. We said that there is a subtle body and a gross body. I think you know it already, but this subtle body has 17 faculty. Right? What are they? Panch Gyanendriya, Panch Karmendriya, Panch Prana, mind and intellect. And each one of them have a associated deva, which is all very beautifully given in Tattvabodh. And each one is either from the sattva, rajas or tamas part of Panch Mahabhut. Right. So the next one, kene sitam vacham imam vadanti, for example. What is it? By whose prompting these words are uttered? I am able to speak. What is it that is allowing me to speak? Now you see, I am speaking and you are listening. This microphone is here. Supposing the battery runs out, which I am very worried, because only the last suppose visibly has anything changed? I am still speaking, the microphone is still here, everything looks the same, but prana chala gaya. The juice of the battery is gone, so you will not be able to hear what I am saying. Similarly for me also, I am saying right now things and you are able to listen to what I am saying. Pran chala gaya. Nothing will come out of this mouth. The vocal cord is still there. Tongue is still there. Teeth are still there. I'll probably sitting like this for a while also before I'll drop off. Or somebody will take me away. But so without that enlivener, which makes the entity living, Nothing is working. So his question is, who is that enlivener? What is that entity because of which everything is vibrant? What is that entity which makes life life? Chakshu Srotram Kaudevo Yanakti. Who are this? What is this divine power? He eventually in his he is trying to convey the message to the teacher, so he uses the word Deva because there is no other better word to use. So he said, who is this Devata which causes this eyes and Srotram, this ear, to work? So we know that in the speech, for example, I believe, right? Kene sitam imam vacham varanti. Rajogun of the akasa tattva. So, sattva guna of all the tattvas are going to the sense organs. Organs of perception. Rajoguna of all the panchamahabhut goes to organs of action. So speech comes under organ of action, and because the sound is conveyed through the akas, therefore they say that rajoguna of the akas tattva creates this, is the deity of ears, or the is creates this hearing, responsible for it. So everything is connected to panchamahabhut, whether they are actually organs of perception or they are organs of action or even mind and intellect. So all 17 faculty are made up of 5 elements. That is what is said in the Tattva Bodh. So if you have not studied Tattva Bodh, please go and study it. So his question is very simple. Now we understand his question is, what is that entity? What is that enlivener because of which all the things that I am doing are happening? Propelled by what force? Please tell me where I can find it. What is the name of that entity? So he has a very beautiful question. Because he has not taken this thing as is. We don't question. Many of us, we don't question. Life chalta hai to chalta hai. We don't question how it is happening. This man actually doesn't want to know that he has not, he doesn't want to accept these answers before that he may have gotten. That he has the devta chala rahe hai, or you know, these devtas are running it, or that ego is there and all that. So therefore he wants a very specific answer. And he goes to the teacher, and now the teacher is going to give him the answer. And he will continue the answer for 9 mantras of this chapter. And then he will continue with the second chapter and third chapter, fourth chapter also. So the second mantra we'll chant in a while is considered to be the key mantra of this whole Upanishad. Every Upanishad has a key mantra. So the entire Upanishad basically is over with this mantra. But because our perception is weak, because our understanding is not very sharp, out of the compassion, the Guru will go on saying things. So, what is the answer? We know the answer. The answer is Chaitanya Atma is the answer. Is the principle that the student is asking for. So the teacher should have said, oh, you don't know. That is Atma, and also known as Chaitanya. Now the moment the student understands, oh, this Chaitanya Atma, then he says, what is Chaitanya? What is Atma? What is the shape of this Atma? Where does he reside? All those questions will come. And the teacher is very careful to avoid any objectification of the answer. Because once we objectify the answer, then we are already in the wrong track. So one of the biggest challenge is Atma Tattva. So when somebody asks questions, what is Atma Tattva, then you, what do you do? So you say, you know, space pervades everything. Atma is like that. So, okay, space, yes, yes. Now the student is meditating on space. I'm not joking, it is true. So he's conceptualizing this Atma as space. It is like, oh, uniform, very subtle, cannot be seen like that. It's everywhere. What was the color of it? It's subtler than the space. Space I cannot visualize. I can barely make out there is space because there is something. But Atma will be, there is another Atma because of which I am able to make out. Then all these nonsense questions will come because we objectified the answer. So to say anything is a problem. So therefore the teacher is very careful in his answer. He wants to avoid any objectification. So he does not say it is Atma, he does not say it is Chidatma. He does not say the Jnana Ghanam. He does not say it is Ananda. He doesn't use any of these words that are used in Upanishads. And that is the beauty of this Upanishad. That is why it is always studied in the school or system of studying Upanishads. So he says, Srotrasya Srotram. Chalo, let us chant. Srotrasya Srotram. मनसो मनो यद वाचो ह वाचम सौ प्राणस्य प्राणः चक्षुष चक्षुरः. Now here is this to hear this one answer. Then the second part of this mantra. अतिमुच्य धीराः प्रेत्यास्म लोकान अमृता भवन्ति. So there are two parts of this mantra. The first is the answer. Answer is, when you ask about this ears, he says, how the ears function, it is because of the ear in the ear. It is the ear of the ear. Manaso mana. How does the mind function? It is the mind of the mind, because of which the mind functions. Vachoha vacham, it is the speech of the speech, because of which you can talk. Sau pranasya prana, then alone, he says again, it is the prana of the prana, because of which the vital air is working in all these five systems. Chakshusa chakshuraha, it is the eyes of the eyes, because of which you are able to see. Now when you hear this answer, a cursory look will say, oh, this is not an answer. What do you mean? Eyes of the eyes, ears of the ears, mind of the mind, what is this? But it is a very profound answer. It's a very peculiar answer. And it conveys a lot of things that we must be able to understand. And that is when he says it is the ear of the ear, that means it is distinct from the ear. It is not the ear. He says ear of the ear. Mind of the mind. So it is distinct from what we know as ear. It is distinct from what we know as mind. It is distinct from what we know as eyes, etc., etc. So therefore, Vilakshana Tattva is indicated. Vilakshan, it is different. And Samarthya Pradhan, it is because of which the ear is working, it is because of which the eyes are working, because of which the mind. So it gives Samarthya. It is the empowering entity in the ear, it is the empowering entity in the eyes, etc., etc. So these two things he has already conveyed. So it is different from the ear, yet it pervades the ear. An ear is also able to function because of that entity. Like that, it is different from the mind, pervades the mind, It is because of which the mind is working. Right. Okay. Now, you know, the teacher does not say that, oh, it is because of Brahman or it is because of Atma Tattva, etc., etc. Because I said it is because, you know, we will actually have objectified. There is a beautiful story in Purana. I think I don't remember the whole thing, but I think. So when Shankar Bhagwan wanted, you know, he went to marry Parvati. So in the mandap, you know, they ask Gotra and all that. And they say, well, who is your father? Now, Shiva is unborn. Yeah. So who is his father? So he thinks for a while, then he says, Narayan, Vishnu. So Gujarati, hai to, Shankar bhai ke baap, Vishnu bhai. So, now that Maharaj doesn't stop there, you know, he says, no, but who is Vishnu's father? Now he's caught. Now, what is Vishnu's father? What did he say? So he said, Likho Shankar. So Vishnu says, cycle comes back. You see, it is like this. Because an entity that is unborn, which is Nirguna Tattva, which is Nirakara Tattva, how to put it in, it will not go in our concept. How can you cannot, and we are always conceptualizing everything. Even mathematical equations or some physical principle and all that, if you mind and intellect, you know, if we think about it, we are always conceptualizing it first, right? It is impossible not to conceptualize. Therefore, it is a very, very difficult question to answer. And I think the teacher did the best in answering this question, because there cannot be any better answer than this. In one stroke, he indicated that it is something different from what you know. Ear of the ear you have never seen, you never heard. Eyes of the eyes you have never heard, never able to see it. Mind of the mind, you don't even know there is a mind of the mind. So that means it is distinct from what you know is this physical and subtle body. So it is a distinct entity. And then it is also the empowering entity because of which everything is working. So both the answers he conveyed in one stroke. This is not very easy to do. Now, the question is whether the student understood it or not. He has done his best to answer. But will the student understand? Now, the teacher is so compassionate that he wants to know whether the student understood. See, because otherwise the teacher will say, okay, I gave the answer, now whether he understood now is his problem. I did the best and leave the rest. Like that, yoga, karma, su, kausalam, he would have left. But he checks. Although he has been very careful that his answer cannot be objectified, he wants to make sure that the student has understood that part of the answer. Therefore, in the third mantra, he comes out and he continues this answer. And his answer is very similar. By the way, ours is not the only philosophy, as I am sure you all know, where it is mentioned that this Paramatma Tattva cannot be indicated in words, nor can it be understood by intellect. Lao Tzu has written a book called Tao Te Ching, right? A Tao is usually sometimes pronounced as Tao, not Tao, although it is spelled T-A-O, it is Tao. So he has said there that the eternal truth cannot be described Because what can be described is only a conception of the mind. Same thing that Upanishads are saying. That eternal truth cannot be described, because what can be described or what can be said is only a conceptualization through the mind of what is to be said. The same thing here you will see in Upanishads also. So, where is it? So he says in the third stanza, let us chant. Na tatra chakshur gacchati. Na vak gacchati. No mano. No vidmo, na vijanimo, tathetada anusishyat, anya devatad vidita, tatho avidita dadhi, iti susrum purvesham, ये नस्तदव्या चचक्षिरे ओके सो लॉन्ग मंत्रा ही इज ट्राइंग ओनली टू मेक श्योर दैट व्हाट ही हैज कम्युनिकेटेड इज नॉट ए मैटर ऑफ ऑब्जेक्टिव साइंस बट इट इज अ मैटर ऑफ एक्सपीरियंस. And that experience is not in the realm of time and space. That experience only happens when I have transcended the mental concept of time and space. And therefore, in transcending that time and space, when I come to experience the supreme reality as nothing other than me, myself, then when I come back to this time and space, it is not possible for me to describe what that was. So Rajanish has actually given an example where he says that, supposing there are two properties and that there is a high wall. So I may have given this example before here, I think. There is a high wall. And there is a lot of good music and everything is coming from there, the other side of the wall. But the people on this side of the wall, they don't know what is going on there. So there was a lot of interest on what is on that other side of the wall. So the kids, you know, they made a pyramid. And they selected one kid. They said, you go onto the top of the pyramid, you see what is there and tell us what is there. The problem was that that kid, when he gets to the top, he jumped onto the other side. So they try again and again, but whoever got to the top, he jumped on the other side. You see, this is exactly the problem. Because who goes there is transcended time and space. And now how to bring that message from that to this? So therefore, you didn't even remind me. So chakshusa chakshurah, then atimuchya dhiraha and all that I didn't do. Pretyasma lokad amruta bhavanti. That part of the second mantra is still there. So let us connect it with this third mantra. So this answer, the teacher says, is actually, when does this answer become your answer? When you become dhiraha. In Gujarati there is a name, Dhirubhai, you know. Dhira. So, and the Dhiro, 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 Se Dhiro. Now, that Dhirubhai is a very important name because that Dhira is different. Not that he is slow, you understand? But in Gujarati, we say Dhira Chet. He is very slow. Dhira. Dhi means Buddhi. And when you say Dhi, that is the highest Buddhi. In other words, it is the sharpest intellect. And one who is Rata in that sharpest, one who is always reveling in his sharpest intellect, that person is Dhiraha. Because the intellect is the first reflection of pure consciousness. So therefore it is less deviated from the truth than anything else. That is the concept. And therefore this says, Atimuchya Dhiraha. Atimuchya, when that person who has become a Dhira, who is now reveals in this intellect alone at all times, when he Atimuchya, when he has transcended his concept of who I am, so he has gone beyond his concept of I am this body, mind, intellect, he has gone beyond this Jiva Bhava. That person will come to understand. It's such a beautiful answer is given. And then immediately he clarifies. This is wonderful. There is in words, if you just keep on playing in the words, the ear of the ear and the mind of the mind and the speech of the speech and all that, you will never get there. You have to intellectually understand what is the meaning and then give up the concept of this limited entity of body, mind, intellect. And then he also gives the fruits, what happens if that happens. That is why this mantra is the very important mantra. It is all, everything is that comes in the Upanishad is already here contained. He says, Pretya asma lokat amruta bhavant. So you will attain that highest fruit. What is that fruit? That highest fruit is that you will become jivan mukta. So while living here, you will be free from all the vagaries of the mind. And that doesn't mean that your life will end, because as long as the prarabdha is there, the life will continue. But the way you look at the world, the vision of the world will change. The vision will change. You will not change and the world will not change. Your vision of the world will change. And then finally, when asmat loka, from this life and death, this loka, mrityu loka, which is the loka of life and death, because we all, everything that is born is dying here. Nothing is permanent. So pretya, when you go from this loka, amruta bhavanti, you will never come back again. You will not go through this cycle of life and death. So this is videha mukti. So what is the Atma? That answer is given. What is Jivan Mukta is also indicated, and what is Videha Mukta is also indicated. So this is the second one. But now having given this answer, he is still worried. Because maybe the student will not understand. So therefore he starts saying, Natatra Chaksu Gacchati. Don't try to see it because the eyes will never reach there. Na vag kachati, don't expect me to tell you exactly in words what it is, because my speech will not reach there. No mano, the mind will not be able to conceptualize it. In fact, you say, na vidnu, I don't know. Oh. You don't know, then why are you wasting my time? You should have just said, you don't know. I don't know as an object. Na vijanimo, the intellect cannot go there. It cannot be a concept of the intellect also. Yathe tad anusishyat, we don't know how to teach it. Kya kare? You are asking a question, but we don't know how to teach it. We don't know how can it be taught. Anya deva tad vidita tatho avidita dadhi. It is not that it is known, nor it is that it is unknown. You cannot say that you know it, nor can you say, I don't know it, because it is beyond known and unknown. Very beautiful. We'll see it in more detail tomorrow. Iti susram purvesham. And they say, he says, I'm only telling you what I have heard from the previous my ancestors. You know, my guru told me, so I'm telling you. So therefore, he says, take it, because it has the emblem of truth all the way from my guru's guru to guru's guru to guru's guru. We'll see it in more detail tomorrow. Om Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate.